All right, everyone, welcome to yet another edition of Liberty Lens. I'm your host, Big John, alongside my friend and co-host, Mr. Mike Termott. And I'm a little short on the snappy intro tonight, Mike, because it's been such a whirlwind day. We actually delayed this episode a couple hours, A, because both of us were busy a little bit, and two, man, there was so much to catch up on today, so much activity coming out of the White House, the markets, overseas. There's been just a lot of interesting stuff. Two former Wall Street guys like ourselves, which I'm sure the president hates, we're not part of Main Street anymore. Secretary Bessent probably has us up on dartboards throwing darts at our pictures there, Mike. But how are you feeling? Are you ready to try to break this down and make sense out of it?
I am totally ready. By the way, they hate you. They don't know who I am. So I make it a point to fly under the radar screen. I agree with you regarding our timing is fortunate. If we had recorded this 8 hours earlier, which is our usual, we're recording this 8 hours later than usual.
Right.
If we had recorded this when we usually do, we would have missed the president's announcement that he was putting a 90-day pause on his tariff regime and the ensuing run-up in the stock market, 10% in the S&P, making up substantially all of the ground lost over the past 3 days.
Just about.
You know, what a shame that would have been, not only because it's important news, but because of the S&P run-up I was able to convey to my wife, Nancy, that we could, in fact, eat dinner tonight.
True. Yeah, it's really interesting how all that worked out. But that's also part of what we want to talk about. So the glasses are coming on because maybe we want to be a little studious tonight, at least on my part. Okay, Mike, let's start off with the basics. Again, let's start off with very little stuff. And some of this might seem nerdish to some folks. We'll try our best to use English as much as possible. Okay, so let's start out with how tariffs were calculated by the Trump administration, because I think this is not a necessarily unimportant concept to understand. Even if we don't understand all the math, let's at least put it together, right? So
I agree with you. I think it's important because the calculation they chose, there's two different controversies here.
Yes.
One is whether they executed on their own calculation correctly. But
right.
The other is that the calculation that they chose signals what it is that the administration cares about.
Right.
And what the president's objectives may be.
Absolutely. So let's just put this up for context. Now.
Oh, boy.
To those folks out there that are neither Austrian economists or of Greek heritage like myself, do you ever hear the phrase that's all Greek to me?
This is
what they meant.
It's all Greek to everybody. I could
yes.
give you a real quick explanation of what that gobbledygook means, but then let's move on quick from it before everyone
sure.
Gets mad at us.
Absolutely. Go ahead,
but
Mike.
What this says is on the left is the increase in tariff rates, okay, the delta
yep.
tau.
They're that saying, would be this right there.
Yeah. Delta tau means the change in the tariff tax rate. Okay. You got to increase the tax rate by an amount equal to the trade deficit, which
that's
is just what's on the top of the right side there.
Right.
The trade deficit as a proportion of overall imports, which is the M in the denominator on the right hand side.
Right.
So it's, you know, the extent to which you have a trade deficit relative to your overall imports. And then in the denominator on the right is two more Greek letters.
Yes.
You got an
epsilon and phi.
And phi. Thank
yeah.
you. And the right. And these indicate the extent to which prices increase as a result of tariff tax. And one represents the extent to which you diminish imports as a result of that price increase.
Right.
So what we're saying is you've got to increase your tariff rate, your tax rate, by enough to reduce imports, by enough to eliminate the trade deficit. That's right. What this equation does. So what this equation signals is what the president's objective is to get rid of all of these bilateral trade deficits.
Right.
So if you've got a big trade deficit with country A, that means that the White House wants to put a large tax on imports from country A. And
right.
It has absolutely nothing to do with the tariff rates that country A imposes already. It has nothing to do with that. In other words, this has nothing to do with reciprocity. They're called reciprocal tariffs.
Right.
But they're not. And anyone who looks at the formula, anyone who's either, you know, gone to economics school or otherwise understands Greek, I'm sorry that represents the two of us.
Right.
But anyone who understands this formula immediately recognizes it has nothing to do with setting a reciprocal rate to punish countries for having tariffs in place.
Right.
It's just a matter of what will it take to get rid of
right.
a trade deficit with another country.
Right. And I think that's very important because, to your point, this has nothing to do with, quote, fairness. It has to do with the perception of, that the president has always had. To be fair, you could find video of him 30 years ago complaining about this. Oh, you know, so we buy more from China than they buy from us, or we buy more from, you know, whatever country you want to pick on earth than they buy from us.
That's exactly right. John, did you see in the news today? Can I change the topic real quick?
Sure.
Did you see in the news today that scientists had resurrected a species that had been long extinct? Did you notice this?
I did not.
This was huge news. Scientists have actually resurrected two different species.
Okay.
One was this, what they call a dire wolf. It's a white wolf that went extinct 100,000 years ago.
Okay.
And the other was the economic concept of mercantilism that had gone extinct 300 years ago, and the White House has brought it back to life. This idea that
right.
a country becomes wealthy by selling stuff and collecting gold.
Right.
And Adam Smith had killed off this idea at the end of the 18th century, and we spent, of course, the 19th century making sure it was dead.
Right.
Not thinking we had to worry about it in the 20th century, much less the 21st century. But here it is, back from extinction, the idea of mercantilism and the idea that what the United States should be doing is eliminating trade deficits, which is based nowhere in
reality.
Science.
Yeah. And you're absolutely right about the mercantilist point, because it really is an economic philosophy that's very closely paired with war. That you know, you set up barriers so people can't steal your stuff and your people can't sell stuff to people who are your enemies. And it really it was really from that time, the 17th century, where, you know, you had the British with their gold, you had the Spaniards with their gold, the British with their silver. And it's ridiculous in today's world, in my opinion, but President Trump has been enamored of this arcane ideology now for a long time. And I think both you and I might be able to agree, Mike, that this is not for the greater good. Now, so since he's focused on trade deficits,
probably motivated for the greater
yes.
good, it's
yes.
just it's
he's
just
wrong.
A swing and a miss as yeah. far as economic science.
Right.
I mean, I don't want to call it economic principles anymore, because after a few hundred years, you kind of know what works and what doesn't.
Right.
At this point, I think we ought to call it, it's just, you know, anti-science.
Right. Don't challenge the science. But here's the thing. Here's the thing, right? The thing that I think is interesting here is that tied up in this mercantilist, we got to get rid of the trade deficit. And I will put aside the MAGA state media that's coming out of the White House that every time the president sends something, there's 100 people that are influencers that will come out and say, this is what I voted for. You're a moron if you believe in free trade.
That's what you got to get a job doing, John.
I'm good at that, but I just don't have the reach yet. But here's the thing, Mike. there is this real political reversal that if we go back to Ronald Reagan and Milton Friedman, who were steadfastly in favor, whatever other faults Reagan may have had, he was a staunch free marketeer. He listened to Milton Friedman, someone who understood something about economics. My question to you is, assuming that Trump hasn't communed at a seance with Frederick List or something, and who is advising him that the best path for the 21st century for American citizens is to rebuild a 17th century world, economic world?
I think that this is an extremely important question, and a question that has not been asked by the press or by a whole lot of other people, perhaps starting today, but certainly not before today and yesterday. We saw a little bit of a dust up between Elon Musk and Peter Navarro that started with Peter insulting Musk's cars, and apparently that was more than Elon could handle.
Right.
And called Navarro basically a guy with an intellect approximately equal to that of a sack of bricks, right?
Right.
And they went back and forth.
Right.
Navarro is a guy who is not really an economist. He's just someone who believes that free trade is not as good an idea as imposing tariffs.
Right.
And I think that the president has been profoundly poorly served. By the way, John, this has been a theme that you and I have shared back and forth for weeks now.
Yes.
Is that I truly believe that the president, however you feel about the president, whether you agree with his principles and his positions and what he's trying to accomplish or not, objectively speaking, he has not been well served by his staff. Whether
I would
it's
agree.
On tariffs or people putting together signal chats or people developing his communication program, he has not been well served. And I think we need to recognize that the White House had this idea that a big difference between the first administration and the second administration would be this loyalty. I need to use my fingers here. The loyalty test.
Right.
Are you loyal to President Trump? And we know that everyone had to say yes or else you didn't get hired. Okay, I get it.
Right.
As libertarians, we're offended by that because you are supposed to be, of course, loyal to the Constitution, not to the president as an individual. Never mind all that, just for a moment. Put a pin in that, right?
Right.
What bothers me is that loyalty to the president sometimes has to be boss. We need to think about doing some things differently than, what we talked about on Tuesday or what we talked about in October or what we talked about 8 years ago. There are some things that I think you really ought to know. And the way you know that he's not getting good advice, besides the fact that things have not gone well with the perception and the market reaction to all this tariff crap, right? But the way you know that he's not getting good advice is that no one's lost their job.
Right.
No one's quit. No one's been fired. I mean, who is fighting with whom? Right. I said a couple of weeks ago when you and I talked about Signalgate, right? As a matter of loyalty, someone needs to quit. Someone needs to say, I screwed up. Right. I'll take the fall, blah, 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 blah. But the other thing that needs to be said is the people in that group, they're not mad at each other. You're telling me that they were all okay with one of the people in that group adding a journalist and someone else in that group adding secrets, and everyone in the group isn't supposed to be okay with that. Come on. Are you people not going to fight about anything as long as the Donald isn't mad at you? You think that life is okay? That's not how this works. In some cases, you can be loyal or you can actually be loyal to what it is that the president is trying to get done. And this is one of those moments when loyalty needs to be proven by bringing to the attention of the boss, look, mercantilism doesn't work. The formula is nothing to do with reciprocity. And a lot of people are going to notice that. So, I can help you sell this. But can we not lie? and say it's got something to do with reciprocal tariffs.
Right.
Which brings us to, you brought up Navarro. It brings us to this idea that the stock market's tanked. Well, the administration says we should have expected some pain, right? Everyone's got a, there's an adjustment period.
Suck it up.
Suck it up, buttercup. It's right. going to be some period of time. It's short run issues, right? The reason you know that that's a lot of baloney is they didn't say it until after the market crashed.
Right. Right.
If you say to us in January, look, the president's going to get sworn in, and then this is what we're going to do. We're going to impose a bunch of tariffs. This is going to be to hammer people into negotiating with us. If they don't negotiate, they're going to be in some trouble with these tariffs, right? And until they cut deals with us, there's going to be a little bit of reaction. We're telling you this because we want you to know in advance where we're trying to go with this, right? We're trying to establish better, freer trade, fairer trade, America first, blah, 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 whatever your shtick is, but sell it in advance. But they didn't do that.
Right. For the most part, they did it.
Trousers down. The markets crashed. They didn't know what to do. They wrote it out for a couple of days and finally said, well, you should have expected some short-term heartburn.
Well, Mike, they did spend time on coming up with a good insult. They came up with panickins.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Right? So what's interesting is, among all this, to your point, not only was it poorly communicated, it was poorly executed. Because much like his getting legal theories from Eastman about how the election was stolen and who can prevent that, right? We said, like, he ignored, in that case, what 99% of people would say was bad advice. Good advice. And instead took the 1% crackpot theory, which had no basis in the Constitution or anything like that. I think he had similar issues here, where it's sort of like, okay, all you nerds that work for me, go find me a formula that will allow me to justify getting rid of this trade deficit. And I think somebody scurried out there, came up with that formula we had before. But then the irony of it is they did their math wrong. So to your point, not only was it the wrong formula to use, but if you were to use that formula,
at least do it right.
Yeah, they got their math wrong. And if
they
that
got
had,
the math wrong.
Right.
They used, going back to the Greek letters in the formula you showed us, they used research that said that if you impose a 1% tax rate, tariff rate, you would get only a 25% of that, a quarter of a percent reaction.
On retail.
In prices, right. And that's because the research shows that, only a quarter of it gets passed through to retail customers.
Right.
But what the research also said that they weren't so good at reading, apparently.
Right.
Or retaining, or passing on. I don't know exactly what went wrong in the chain of events, but is that a 1% change in the tariff rate would probably get you a full 1% in the import price. It substantially all gets passed through.
Right.
And so you don't need a quadruple tax rate to kill off imports.
Right.
You only need a certain percentage. And so the White House came up with these tax rates that turned out to be huge.
For no reason.
Four times what would have made sense according to the formula.
Right.
But they did the formula wrong. Now, of course, the administration says, we intended to do that. And again, back to the communication strategy. If you were to come out and tell us, we don't even have a formula to back this up. The president pulled half of them out of his right ear and half of them out of his left ear, and that's how we got the numbers.
Or some other part of his anatomy, but whatever, yeah.
I think as an economist, I would have been okay with that because what he's saying is it's all about negotiation. It's all about how pissed off I am. If I'm pissed, I'm going to give you a big number. If I'm not pissed, I'm going to give you a small number. Everyone, call me you know, 4, 5, 6, 1200, and, you know, we'll negotiate these out. But don't come up with the BS formula, then do the formula wrong, and then mislabel it as reciprocity and pretend like there's science behind all this. Well, if that's it's a negotiation, just tell me it's a negotiation.
Right. And what's interesting about this is that dopey formula led him to tariff countries that had no tariffs on us. So you look at something like Australia. By virtue of the fact that we have a trade deficit with Australia, they got hit with a tariff. And you see all these folks from Australia on X saying, like, wait a second, we're not tariffing you guys. Why are we getting hit with a 10%? Because according to the formula, we have a trade deficit. So we want to get rid of it.
And that's a real panic if you're Australian, because what are you going to do about it?
Right, right.
You got nothing to negotiate with. You've already lowered your tariffs away.
Right. They'd have to go deflationary and give stuff away literally for it to make sense. So that would, to me, is also the dishonesty of it, right? Because the truth of the matter is, to your point, it has nothing to do with the reciprocity. They're just using, they're hoping there are not enough Greeks in this country or Austrian economists to understand what all that gobbledygook was that we had up on the screen, Mike. And for the most part, like, sadly, to your point, most people didn't understand it at all. And FYI, the first place that I became aware of this is when you read it, a paper that was put out by the American Enterprise Institute, a think tank. FYI, a conservative think tank, not one of these Marxist, liberal, libtard think tanks, but a conservative one, someone that...
Not only conservative, John, but notably Republican.
Very notably, yes. Yes.
And so now the White House felt like they had to attack AEI, which is
right.
What are you doing? You know, what are you doing? You're better off just saying, I know this isn't in their wheelhouse, but you would have been actually better off to say, you know what? You're right. We got that wrong, but it doesn't matter.
Because we don't care.
Because we don't care. Right. And because the president today announced.
Yeah.
He's pausing the tariffs on pretty much the whole world except for a 10% tariff, which we also hope will eventually get paused, except for China.
Right.
Because China is the nation that retaliated with a bunch of tariffs of their own.
Right.
More tariffs. They already had all kinds of tariffs, had all kinds of non-tariff trade barriers. And the White House says something like 75 countries have called. They want to negotiate. I'm sure the rest of them want to negotiate also. Think, John, and by the way, the stock market ran up after that, right?
Yeah.
Now, think how lucky, communications-wise, how lucky the White House is that China came up with a different plan than everybody else, because now the White House has an excuse. Never mind the formula. Never mind mercantilism. Right. Never mind everything. What we really mean is everyone's going to go negotiate with us. We're going to come out looking good. And we get to punish China because China retaliated against us, which is pretty much where you would want to be anyway, because China has been a bad actor in terms of trade for decades, including during the first Trump administration. They steal our intellectual property, and they steal all kinds of other secrets, and they have weird trade barriers, and they subsidize businesses that they want to subsidize, and they mix trade and militarism around the world, and they do a lot of stuff that's against America's interests. If you had come out of the box January 20 and said, you see where we're going here, if you had said, this is where we want to be.
Right.
Right? You could have avoided all of this silliness.
Yeah, and also, like, why are you cheering on that you got Vietnam and Australia to capitulate? I don't understand. Like, what, you know, like
they had been the big problem.
Well, that's my point. It's like, what are you ridiculous? And listen, I want to play a quick video by a Republican senator who actually realized at some point, Mike, that the authority to levy taxes and tariffs, since tariffs are taxes, is actually laid out in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. And guess what? It's not the president's authority. It's that of Congress. So much like the ability to engage in undeclared wars, Congress has abdicated its duties once again to the president. They just don't want to get off their butts and do something. So let me see if I could bring this up. And I thought this was interesting.
Republican, I am a supporter of Donald Trump, but this is a bipartisan problem. I don't care if the president is a Republican or a Democrat. I don't want to live under emergency rule. I don't want to live where my representatives cannot speak for me and have a check and balance on power. One person can make a mistake. And guess what? Tariffs are a terrible mistake. They don't work. They will lead to higher prices. They are a tax, and they have historically been bad for our economy. But even if this were something that was magic and it was going to be a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, I wouldn't want to live under emergency rule. I would want to live in a constitutional republic where there are checks and balances against the excesses of both sides, right or left.
All right. So that was Senator Rand Paul, son, of course, of Ron Paul, libertarian icon. And he addressed the political nature of it.
Arguably a libertarian icon himself.
Arguably, yes. He still has that R by his name, but we'll work on that. But the point being is everything he said was spot on. And if you listen to the whole 30-minute speech that he made on the floor, he also railed against, like, why these tariffs are bad, how free trade has improved the lot of individuals around the world, and that when there's tariffs in place, Mike, our buying choices are limited. More money leaves our pockets for the same goods that cost us a lot less, say, prior to the tariffs, whether that's electronics, food, utilities, steel, whatever. It affects small businesses. It affects everyday man. So it angers me to no end when you hear someone like Besant get on or Lutkin get on and say, hey, wait a second. Guess what, folks? All those 401ks that President Trump used to campaign and say, look at your 401k and see how bad Biden is doing. Yeah, well, forget about all that. That was nonsense. What we really mean is that 401ks are for the elites. For you Main Streeters, this is going to be awesome because we're going to build factories in this country that screw screws into Apple iPhones, according to Lutkin. That's a direct quote. Like, that's what the president is after. Let's build those factories that are going to go screws into iPhones, which, by the way, might cost $3,000 if you were to build them entirely here in the U.S., right? So talk to me again. We've talked about tariffs and why they're bad, but who is it? I mean, I know there's people who believe this, but who believes this nonsense that a good thing to do would be to reinvent the industrial age as if it was 1850 in this country, that is where our country's best interests lie?
People who believe that the 20th century was the right type of economy for 21st century America also believe that 17th century economics is the way that we should look at the science of understanding how to advance our standard of living. I don't believe that it's a coincidence that those two groups of people have substantial overlap. This goes to, as I was saying before, a real problem with the staff work around the president. And by the way, I think this is going to be a problem in terms of negotiating with China. I wouldn't want to go out on a limb and say that the Chinese government is full of people who are dumb. But when it comes to economics, they're what we would call dumb.
Okay.
But they are also what we would call not very libertarian, right? So imagine how this negotiation is going to go.
Right.
We're going to punish China. What's the tariff rate on China? You know, I haven't checked in the last 20 minutes. I think it's like a buck and a 125% maybe.
It was 104, and I think he upped it after they retaliated again. So I think it's let's just say it's at least 104%.
It's over 100%, right?
I mean, yeah, it's over 100%.
Anything coming into the United States from China is going to have to double in price. Okay.
At least, yeah.
And the theory is that the Chinese government is going to say, oh boy, that really stinks. We're going to have to react to that in a way that causes us to negotiate with the United States toward free trade. I doubt that. I seriously doubt that the People's Republic of China is run by a communist party that lies awake at night and worries about economic efficiency, that worries about its citizens' rights to engage in transactions as they see fit.
Right.
That worries about the growth in income or lack thereof because of the lack of efficiency.
Right.
That worries about the political pressure that comes from a lack of income growth.
Right.
That worries about the short-term issues that come up because of political pressure. This is a government that plays the long game, that only cares about control, their control of its citizenry. They don't care about income growth from 1 hour to the next or the political pressure or people's rights. They certainly don't care about economic efficiency. So the idea that you're going to pressure these people into negotiating successfully, I think, is a long shot. Now, you might find something that really eventually leverages them, right? I'm not saying that you can't negotiate with these people.
Right.
But this idea that, you know, we'll raise tariffs, you raise tariffs, and they're going to cave because it's so much more important to them than it is to us. This is what Besant and Navarro are talking about, because the United States economy is so much bigger, which is true, right?
Right.
Is that, you know, we import from them something like, you know, 3 or 4 times what they import from us. So the pain caused by shutting down trade is going to be a lot worse for them than it is for us. Yes, but the pressure on the government is 1/3 or 1/4 that it is here,
if
because
that much.
They just don't have the political pressure. They don't care about your rights.
Well, the other thing, Mike, also is for all their nonsense, the people in this country enjoy a much higher standard of living on average than the average Chinese citizen. I mean, whether you talk to people anecdotally that have escaped China to the U.S., who, by the way, are the equivalent of the guys who escaped Castro's Cuba who came here in Miami, the best type of free marketers that ever existed on the planet are the people who escaped these totalitarian hellholes to come here. And when you talk to them, they say things like, "I can't believe we're doing this." You know, it's like we're acting more like China now. And so that to me is also the issue, right? Like, for you to defeat China, you have to essentially become China when economically, right? You have to raise tariffs.
And for them to defeat us, they would have to become more like we were until a month ago.
That's what I'm saying.
And they can't do it either.
That's crazy. It's so crazy. And the American people, I guarantee you, Trump is a populist. The second he sees sentiment turn against him, like as soon as the Benny Johnsons, DC Dranos, Cat Turds, and all these other like paid media actors from the state, all of a sudden, as soon as their influence runs out and you can't get enough witticisms and panicking slogans and crap like that going, people are going to feel pains. I mean, even on Fox News today, I saw it, they were having a case study, and they said, look, there's this small business owner here in the U.S., he's a special needs toy maker, so he makes toys for kids with special needs. As a result of this tariff, his costs were going from $17,000 a year to $136,000 a year because of the parts and then the tariffs and the levies and the added costs and all this. And he said, guess what? If this keeps up,
I'm out.
I'm out. I have to shut down my business. How is that helping the small business person? And by the way, it's not just China. The same thing happens with the Canadian tariffs, with the Mexican tariffs.
Of course, you know, and this is why, to your point, the stock market crumbling the last several days is what put enormous amount of political pressure on the administration.
Right.
And in my view, they just got lucky that China reacted badly and they were able to switch the narrative to, well, we're punishing them because they behaved badly with retaliation and we're going to put a pause on everyone else because they didn't. So we wound up in a place that allowed the stock market to run back up. And we all hope that the market has bottomed out and we're going to have relatively smooth sailing here. By the way, it is completely possible that we do end up in a good place after all of this. It is possible that the White House does cut deals. I think for their own sake, in terms of time and the efficient use of their time, they're able to do it multilaterally, rather, as Elon Musk suggested, a free trade zone with the Americas and Europe is the holy grail for what we should be looking at the moment. I suppose the holy grail would be turning the planet, a world free trade zone, and maybe someday we'll get there. But it is possible that we get to a very good place through what the administration has done, whether this is all planned out or not. It clearly was not, but if it goes in a good place, we need to cheer them on.
Sure.
That's all terrific. One of the things I worry about, we've talked about this a little bit in the past, is a loss of confidence by investors, particularly investors outside the United States, to come into the United States because, you're never sure what the federal government is going to do. That's a real issue. And we did see overnight, particularly in Japanese markets, a great deal of dumping of United States Treasury securities, driving up yields, driving up interest rates, the borrowing rates for the U.S. federal government, not by what you would call a lot in household language, but if that were to happen over and over again, it could cost us a tremendous amount of money and undermine the value of the dollar, which has been eroded. These are real life implications of not having very, very steady policy. So I'm hoping not only that we wind up in a good place, but we have a more steady path to get to wherever it is that we are going.
Yeah, and I want to just talk a minute about what you just mentioned about the Treasury yields and the Treasury bonds, and because at the outset of this nonsense, one of the things that was coming out of the White House, again, through their state-sponsored media, was the like, hey, you guys are not playing 5D chess like President Trump is. See, he's purposely driving up the bond market because that'll drop the yields, right? So the price of a bond, it works in opposite, right? For people who don't know, if the price of a bond goes up, the interest rate goes down, right? And then the opposite is true, right? If the interest rate. So he says, here's how smart Trump is and smarter than everybody else. He's purposely driving up the bond market so that when the government has to reauthorize all the debt that he's okay with, they'll pay a lower interest rate. So he's trying to knock that interest rate down. Well, the only problem with that is historically, I did the math on this, Mike, so you wouldn't have to. If he got the yields down 100 basis points, which for folks would mean 1%, right? The amount of interest he would save in fiscal year 2025 was $360 billion.
Yep.
Hey, why not save $360 billion on $36 trillion worth of debt, right? So, but additionally, he would save $360 billion, but because of his tariffs, those same moves cost us $11 trillion in market cap. So there was a weird trade-off. That's the first thing. So it was a nonsensical point. The second thing I wanted to do is that
– And worse than that, because it takes a while for the increase in interest rates to get to that 360.
Yeah.
Not all of the debt gets refinanced every year.
Right. So it's – right. It's sort of like an overlapping thing, right? It's like a ladder type of thing.
The first year, it wouldn't even be all the 360 is my point.
I'm giving him the benefit of his bad math. So let's say it's $360 billion, right? But here's the other thing too. What we saw – happened in Japan. Now, Mike, I told you I used to work on the street about the same time you did. One of my first jobs was FX, was foreign exchange credit analysis. And this is when you stay up till 6 in the morning because you can't sleep, right? Japan was hurt for harbinger overnight. Like you said, somebody in Japan, probably a big bank that had to cover some calls there, had to drop a lot of U.S. treasuries into the market, 10-year bonds into the market. That interest rate did the exact opposite of what the administration wanted. It went to 4.4, 4.5, 4.55, and then the panic set in, right? Why? Because now you have the opposite reasoning. The interest rate is going up, which means less confidence in the dollar, less confidence in the United States as a place to do business, and more importantly, it'll cost you more to finance that continuing resolution that Trump got Mike Johnson to pass. So,
That's exactly right.
So now you've got that, but here's what most people aren't talking about. I'll mention it to you. You tell me what you think, if I'm an idiot or not. Who is one of the biggest holder of U.S. treasuries in the world?
China. U.S. financial institutions and the Chinese government.
What happens if China decides to if President Trump decides to do this really nutty and say tariffs reach 500% on China or whatever? Because, listen, as silly as that would have been to utter at one point in our lives, Mike, it can't be considered silly when President Trump is sitting in the White House, right? So let's say it gets to 200, 300, 400% tariffs on China. Yay, U.S. What if China just says, you know what? Let's take our $1 trillion in U.S. bonds and drop them into the bond market all on the same day or within a week?
Not only would that be a disaster, but I think a milder version of that is not only not unlikely, I think it is quite likely.
Mm.
And the reason I say that is because consider where all those dollars come from. The Chinese collect all of these dollars by selling us stuff.
Right.
If we stop buying all this stuff because of the tariffs, they stop buying treasury securities with all those dollars they're collecting. They also shut down foreign direct investment into our economy. But to your point, a larger piece of the puzzle is the treasury securities that they buy. They stop buying treasury securities. That doesn't mean that they sell necessarily what they're holding, but they buy they buy hundreds of billions every year, right?
Right.
So if you shut that down, as things get refinanced over a period of years, you do get a $1 trillion impact.
Yeah.
So it's a milder version of what you're saying.
But well, mine is the nuclear option. I'll grant you.
There is the nuclear option, which could happen.
Right.
But even if the Chinese didn't make any decision whatsoever, if we made it for them and shut down trade with them or diminish trade with them,
right,
they're just going to have fewer dollars to invest back into treasury securities. So it's going to happen whether you want it to or not over time.
And if that happens, and the rest of the world is seeing this constant battle, the back and forth, the dumping of treasuries, the lack of purchase of treasuries, what does that do to the status of the dollar as the world's reserve currency, which quite honestly is a big boost to our economy?
It undermines it and raises the specter that someone else should be challenging it. As you and I have discussed in the past, there isn't an obvious suitor to replace the dollar at the moment. But whoever it is going to be collecting dollars if we pick up with a giant trading partner other than China. Or if international trade shuts down is a little dramatic, but diminishes over time, diminishes over time, it could mean that the United States dollar does remain the reserve currency, but it could be that's just not that important anymore.
Right.
If there's not as much trade, then the fact that we are the dominant reserve currency, ho-hum, because it's not an international economy anymore. And that would be a shame because we still do need to refinance all these treasury securities, which brings us back to what we're going to have to start talking about next week or the week after, which is the government stopping from spending so much money and needing to raise all this debt, and where the budget resolution is going in the Senate and the House.
Wouldn't that have been just a much, we could talk a full show next week, but wouldn't that have been the much simpler solution? I posited that to one of these MAGA people on, and I was like, hey, wouldn't the simple solution have been if he just said, hey, let's cut spending by 5% instead of increasing it by extending Biden's budget, right? You would have knocked down the interest. You would have knocked down the debt.
Consider, you're not going to want to, your audience is not going to want to hear this, I'm afraid. But consider that the White House does recognize that it's not trade barriers and tariffs that are causing these trade deficits, right? We saw that in the formula they chose for driving reciprocal tariffs. They know that they're not reciprocal. They know they have nothing to do with foreign government's tariffs. Okay.
Right.
What they're doing is they're trying to come up with a tariff to eliminate the trade deficit. Okay. That's your goal, is to eliminate the trade deficit. The trade deficit generates dollars that go abroad that come back and buy treasury securities. That mechanism works in the other direction too. If you stop borrowing so much, you won't run such a trade deficit.
Why wouldn't my audience want to hear that, Mike? I think that's exactly what my audience wants to hear. I think that's exactly what our audience, I'm including you. I'm going to rope you into this.
Insane. Instead of doing two things wrong, tariffing and spending, if you had done neither one wrong, if you had done them both right, leave tariffs at zero.
Right.
Which ours haven't been, but drive them to zero. Never mind. Right. Who cares about the tariffs? In Besant's language, who cares, right?
Right, right.
Stop the tariffs and stop borrowing so much money, you will improve your trade deficit over time.
Right. It's one of those things that doesn't need a shock and awe to the economic environment.
Smarter policy based on long-term, tried-and-true economic principles.
Wow. Okay. You know what, Mike? I'm going to shut up because that's a good way to end the show. That's a great point you made, and I think that's what we should leave our audience with. Okay, everyone, you just listened to the wisdom of Mike Termont, which, let's face it, has been drawn upon the greats, Adam Smith, Milton Friedman, Basquiat, and Say, and Valises, and Rothbard.
On the shoulders of giants, John.
Yeah, we do indeed, and if we only listen to them more often, I think we'd be better off. But on that note, you've been watching Liberty Lens right here on grumblingsmedia.com. Catch us every Thursday when new episodes drop. Until next week, for Mr. Mike Termont and myself, Big John, peace, everyone.